Welcome to Transforming Energy, the NREL podcast, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory. We're highlighting the latest in clean energy research and innovations happening at the lab. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Taylor Mankel.
And I'm not Karen Jeremin.
No, you're not, but you're no stranger to the NREL podcast. Karen is taking a few well-deserved days away, and we have our special correspondent, Natalia Small, filling in. Welcome to the sound booth, Natalia.
Thanks so much, Taylor. I'm glad to be here and talk about some of the lab's recent work. I'll do my best to make Karen proud.
Oh, you'll do great. We are lucky to have you. Let's dive right in.
Taylor, I've got a question for you. What do Hawaii and Alaska have in common?
A lot of different directions to go on this one, but first thing that comes to mind is they're great rare finds on that road trip classic license plate game.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, when I think about these two states, think about a lot of remote communities.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of challenges and costs associated with having to ship goods and materials to these remote areas.
Right.
They both face unique energy challenges like limited energy infrastructure, high costs of imported energy, and vulnerability to natural disasters.
And two communities in these two states, Molokai, Hawaii, and Sitka, Alaska, were selected to participate in the Energy Transitions Initiative Partnership Project, also called ETIP. ETIP is managed by NREL and brings together technical expertise from four national laboratories with local knowledge from regional partner organizations.
All with the goal of helping these remote communities pursue their energy resilience objectives. While Molokai and Sitka may have different renewable energy goals, ETIP is a place where they can share experiences and opportunities to help each other. Both view community engagement as a critical part of achieving those goals.
It is, and the first thing energy planners did on Molokai was ask community members how they wanted to get involved and what sort of things were stopping them from participating.
And by conducting thorough and methodical research, they could make sure they reached key groups, allowing for community-led energy planning, where communities can co-design projects.
Sitka hopes to emulate some of Molokai's successful community engagement practices in its ETIP project.
Goals for this ETIP project are to really put together something that takes the best aspects of the technical assistance that we have, but also tap into the incredible amount of knowledge that our community has. Really create something that everybody can see themselves in and shows what can be done when decisions are community-driven and community-led, really.
That was Bree Gable, the sustainability coordinator for the city and borough of Sitka. Gable said their team drew heavily from Molokai's approach of community education and engagement to get the people of Sitka involved and excited. It's such a great example of why these networks are important and how knowledge sharing creates better solutions.
Oh, yeah. So Sitka's latest ETIP project will analyze and compare future forecasted energy demand, accounting for increased loads from heating electrification, electric transportation, and other decarbonization technologies. The outcome of the analysis will help Sitka match previously identified renewable energy opportunities to meet forecasted energy demand, all with feedback incorporated from the community.
I know you're new to the full episodes, Natalia, but one thing you're not new to is NREL and our list of never-ending acronyms.
I am very familiar.
So let's dive into one of my favorites for us to highlight here, BOTTLE. The bio-optimized technologies to keep thermoplastics out of landfills and the environment, or BOTTLE Consortium.
The BOTTLE Consortium, which is funded by the U.S. Department of Energy and led by experts at national labs and universities, is doing some great work with some really cool companies, like working with outdoor clothing brands you might find in your closet. You too, Taylor.
That's right. For example, The North Face is on a quest to leave a smaller footprint with their apparel, and the brand has tapped the BOTTLE Consortium to find out if a biodegradable polyester alternative could be a good fit for their clothes.
Textile production is a big culprit of emissions. In fact, the supply chain accounts for almost 10% of global carbon dioxide emissions.
Wow.
10%? That's huge! Mm-hmm. And polyester, which chances are, if you check your clothing tags you're wearing right now, is a big part of that problem.
Yeah, I just checked. I've got some polyester on today, which is derived from petroleum. And fibers from polyester clothing account for nearly half of all microplastics in the natural environment. Nearly half.
Wow.
Just shed from clothing being worn, washed, and dried.
It's pretty wild to think about. But NREL and Colorado State University, my alma mater, both members of the Bottle Consortium, are coming up with solutions to replace today's polyester with a non-toxic, biodegradable, easier-to-recycle alternative made from polyhydroxyl alkaninate. You gave me all the hard words, Taylor. Oh my gosh, is this because I'm new? I don't even know if I pronounced that correctly.
Polyhydroxyalkanoate. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I had to say it too, but it's more commonly known as PHA. And over the next year, Bottle is going to scale the process of producing PHA fiber, and the North Face is going to test and evaluate it for use in its product lines.
The goal is to find the perfect PHA fiber for clothing that looks good, feels good, and performs well even in the most punishing outdoor conditions.
Mm-hmm. Enabling adventures to scale mountains, run trails, and explore cities without leaving a trail of microplastics behind.
Like our last story, this one is all about lessening our impact on the world. As we move toward a greener future, we also need to understand the potential adverse effects of renewable energy technologies, even before they are deployed.
So true. This work, called Life Cycle Assessment, studies the life cycles and environmental impacts of renewable energy technologies. Life cycle assessments use cradle-to-grave evaluation to get a sense of a technology's environmental impacts from start to finish.
Cradle-to-grave looks at three phases. The upstream phase is all about resource extraction, manufacturing, and related transportation. Then the operational phase looks at technology use and maintenance. And finally, the downstream phase is about dismantling, decommissioning, and disposing or recycling at the end of a technology's life.
While most renewable energy technologies don't produce emissions during use, all three of those phases help us understand the full picture of renewable energy technology's impact.
Exactly. And NREL is the only Department of Energy national laboratory with a dedicated team of researchers working on a unique form of life cycle assessment that uses computer code to scale traditional life cycle assessment and accommodate greater amounts of life cycle data, processes, and technologies.
Most of what NREL does is design technology to make the world better through cheaper, cleaner, more equitable, sustainable energy. And these assessments are making sure those technologies are not causing unintended consequences. Oh, well, thank you so much for stepping in today, Natalia.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you're usually here to talk about our employee resource group. So while you're here, do you have any good updates from that area before we close things out?
Absolutely, I do.
Great.
You know, Taylor, there's always something going on. Mm-hmm. And this month is Women's History Month. And we have some great events planned throughout the end of March. So NREL is supporting a DOE interlaboratory event featuring global keynote speaker Kate Maxwell that will focus on leading fearlessly and authentically. I'm also personally excited about a super chill social hour where folks from across the lab can chat with members of the Women's Network, spend time with their coworkers, and share cookies.
Nice.
My favorite. Our listeners can also join the celebration by heading over to NREL's social media pages and sharing the Women's History Month videos created by the Women's Network members. Check out videos from Melissa Gish, Barbara O'Neill, and Yifan Dong on how they got to NREL, some of their hobbies, and what it means to advance women in leadership positions. So, Taylor, these videos are so, so great. Mm-hmm. I really love it when NRELians have the chance to share their stories. So, listeners, go on our social media pages, like, follow, share.
Love it to see it. Fantastic videos. And happy Women's History Month to everyone at NREL and beyond, yourself included, Natalia.
Thank you, Taylor.
And listeners, as always, we'll be back in 2 weeks with more news. And be sure to rate and review us on your favorite podcast player or reach out to us at podcast@nrel.gov to share your thoughts.
This episode was adapted from NREL news articles from February and March 2024. Written by Carol Laurie, Eric Ringel, and Brooke Van Zant. Our theme music is written and performed by Ted Vaca, and episode music by Chuck Koenig, Jim Riley, and Mark Sanseverino of Drift BC. This podcast is produced by NREL's Communications Office and recorded at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Colorado. We express our gratitude and acknowledge that the land we are on is the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute peoples. We recognize and pay respect to the Indigenous peoples from our past, present, and future, and are grateful to those who have been and continue to be stewards of this land.